Welcome to Faith Over Breakfast. You are listening to a podcast by Pastor Eric Siepen and Pastor Andy Littleton. If you enjoy Faith Over Breakfast, we encourage you to rate it on the Apple Podcast app, on Spotify, or Google Play. Thank you and enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to Faith Over Breakfast. My name is Andy Littleton. I'm sitting here with Eric Siepen from The Village.
I almost forgot about this part.
You almost did. I'm from Mission Church.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Well, I stumbled on an article about a yoga guru who was getting into conspiracies, and the article, coming from a secular source, made some very, very concrete statements about relativism and truth, which I found very interesting. So we discussed that for a bit, and a little bit, a little bit of checking in how we're doing for those of you who like to hear that stuff at the end. And yes,
yeah, that's it. Fun. It was a fun, quick. I feel like we had half our podcast on the telephone.
We did.
So you guys missed that, but it was good. We caught up on life.
Yeah. Which I'm grateful for. Yeah. So anyway, don't you wish you'd been on that phone call?
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's only if you're behind the paywall, you can get that.
That's it. Yeah. Okay, that'll be our next
Patreon.
That's our next step. Anyway, enjoy the podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, Eric, you and I have been, we've been chatting on the phone because I was trying to go around construction on Speedway Boulevard.
And
so, you know, we've
already caught up.
We've caught
up. So people don't get to hear the part that apparently is the compelling part of Faith Over Breakfast.
It's compelling if you go to The Village and annoying if you go to Mission.
That's what
I've heard in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's.
Oh, you Mission people don't.
So this is more of a Mission cast.
It's a Mission cast. Oh, we better hurry and get to the main subject.
Yeah, let's get to the subject. The subject is the roof leak at The Village.
Yes.
No.
No. And the roof leak apparently at Mission.
We have a little one. Yeah.
Right.
It's predictably. Actually, it's funny because if you sit in the back row, which people tend to do, you're going to get dripped on. So maybe you should sit in the front.
Yeah, front row people. I've noticed the few times that I've gone to Mission that there are definite front row seats available.
There's always. So we've started doing a little kids catechism conversation. And so oddly now it's nice that front row is available because they all come up to the front.
Yeah.
But other times it's just strange. It's usually it'll even be the first two rows will be almost entirely empty. And then there every once in a while there's somebody that just goes, you know what? I'm just going to front row it.
If Sue and I are together, then we're always in the front two rows.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my church probably reflects myself. I'm not so much a front row.
You're
person.
a back row guy.
Yeah, or back to middle back.
Back to middle back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we have a couple topics to talk about.
We do. I just sent you, I didn't even send you the full article because it was one I sort of stumbled on.
Well, yeah, it's a short little text here that you sent me. Do you want to give the people a title of the article? And then I'll just read it out loud.
Okay. Give me a moment here. So this is on NPR. Maybe I can't give you one. Because do I still have, here it is. She was a popular yoga guru. Then she embraced QAnon conspiracy theories. So this is, NPR. This is on Morning Edition.
Morning Edition.
And so there's audio. It's a 6-minute audio. And then they did an article style of it. And so it's about this yoga instructor in Los Angeles, basically, who was very unique. She was seemed very spiritual, wore turbans, spoke in Sanskrit from time to time, very... very yoga, very uber yoga, and like very uber spiritual,
right?
And then, but also kind of would cuss and stuff like that. So you know, all of a sudden I had this weird thing where I was like, it's oddly like the Mark Driscoll of church planting, but this is the yoga version of that,
right? Right.
But she was popular. People like Alicia Keys went to her. Like people loved her because she felt real and raw,
right,
and all this stuff. So, but then she had a lot of interesting takes on things. So then during the pandemic, she ended up being, you know, kind of more down the QAnon path and started doing a podcast with people that people were very surprised that she would associate with and maybe didn't even associate with before, and ended up in a way like radicalized. And some people followed her all in, or, you know, started following her at that time. Others were like, oh, can't go there with her. And basically the article was saying, this is not your typical QAnoner, but what are the similarities between her and her, you know, and other people who embraced things of that nature? And they showed some pretty similar paths, like distrust of things like institutions and a relativism around truth. And so that's where I sent that to you.
Yeah.
The reason that jumped to me, I honestly kind of just...
Well, let me, you want me to read it before you...
Well, I'll just say this one thing. Okay. I wasn't, this isn't the type of article I tend to dig into that deeply.
Right.
That sort of popped out at me, and then I read it more closely because this is something I've been noticing in the secular media over the last 5-6 years that is new. That when I started ministry, I feel like I was not hearing this in secular media.
Right.
This was coming from my parents' generation and people within the church, these type of sayings.
Right.
Anyway, so.
Yeah, well, I just like, so she says, the many people who practice and teach yoga distrust Western medicine, preferring to find an alternative solution or try to let their bodies heal itself. The relativism around truth, which has so long been part of the wellness culture, really reared its head in the pandemic, said Natalia Petzarezla, I think is an author and historian at the New School. This idea that truth is just in the eye of the beholder is something which can feel kind of empowering when you were sitting in a yoga class. But when it's the pandemic and that kind of language is being deployed to a kind of foment like vaccine denial or COVID denialism, it has the same power because we're all steeped in the culture and it can be used for real harm. And then she goes on to talk about that. And that's
And I actually am not so much interested right now in talking about vaccines or COVID.
No.
It's more so
that statement. Yes.
The relativism around truth.
Yes.
And just going, whoa, this is a news source that I would have expected to be in the recent past to be more annoyed with people who were arguing for quote unquote truth.
Right.
And saying, hey, look, let's be a little more tolerant. Now they're kind of leaning back in a different direction towards something that the Christian community that I experienced was asking everybody to consider that truth was not relative. I don't know. Anyway, so what do you think of this?
Well, what I think is that, you know, I've been reading a book called The Air We Breathe.
Yeah.
And the whole point of the book is that there are about 7 values that we hold as a culture that are Christian values, even though we don't attribute them to that anymore. One being progress, science, equality, consent.
Yeah. Those did come from the Christian community.
They come from the Christian community, but we no longer attribute them a lot of times. And so we still analyze things in that context.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
As young husbands and dads, we've transitioned from singleness to one filled with new responsibilities. Marriage, parenting, and our careers can be overwhelming. Our wives, kids, and the people at work depend on us. How do we invest, effectively communicate, and lead well in these relationships? Do we burn bridges or build lasting connections? This show is called No Longer Nomads, and I'm your host, Josh Doyle. The podcast is dedicated to helping men follow the way of Jesus and build a legacy that outlives their lives by investing in their relationships now. Here at No Longer Nomads, we believe that every nomad needs a friend. So join us. No Longer Nomads, available wherever you get your podcasts now.
Like things like progress would have come from a reading of the cultural mandate in Genesis and the belief that we were supposed to go into the world and develop it and not just leave it as is, but move it in a forward direction to some degree. And that was a key instruction to mankind. Then I forget the others you said, but these had scriptural backing and were
science
that
they're all
thing.
Built out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so the book traces this historically and how we developed those. But the point of the book, and I think that's what we're running into, is that people are now evaluating relativism based on these ideas that we've had forever, but we don't attribute to Christians anymore. And so they're saying, well, no, there has to be some kind of truth. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like life doesn't work if you don't have that.
And there's no point to, when people don't agree, that you can point to a fact.
Right.
And say, well, look, this has been established.
Yeah.
So you can have your thought, but it's not true.
Right.
And I feel like the Christian community used to be big on this. Well, so to the point of your book, The Air We Breathe, I've heard of it.
It's a really good book. People should read it.
There you go. The Air We Breathe. And I've read a decent amount of James K. A. Smith, who talks about such things in some of his, but I don't have the titles off the top of my head on that topic. But he calls it borrowed capital, that so much of Western society operates on borrowed capital from Christianity that it doesn't realize is borrowed.
Right.
And we'll even critique Christianity using it.
Well, and I think we land on these values and these things when things start encroaching on, so to speak, our own soil. So when all of a sudden during the pandemic, certain people are like, wait, well, science is telling us that these are good. Now, I'm not arguing if they're not good or bad when it comes to vaccines. But all of a sudden, now you can't say truth is relative because it's hitting up against one of my values of like my set of facts that I think have, you know, that are true.
Yeah. It's interesting. You said something when we were chatting on my drive over here that I wanted to come back to about. So I was saying to you that, and I still think people of that generation in the church that I'm thinking of, that they do believe in truth. They want there to be absolute truth.
Right.
And I'm noticing that they will negotiate that in certain situations.
Right.
And then this, like, quote unquote secular media that we're reading right now, I feel often has negotiated that.
Yes.
But then in a moment like this, they go, hold on, we need it. So you were giving some thoughts on why you think we will stand for it in some circumstances and negotiate it in others.
I was?
Yeah.
What did I say?
It was something like when it begins to impact my daily life.
Right.
If the truth is, you know, not convenient.
Right.
Right.
Yes. When it starts, yes. Or vice versa. I mean, I think like it's easy for us to say, and this is what I was thinking, like when I say, well, this is my truth, as long as my truth does not interfere with your truth in the sense of like we're talking about some the way I identify my personhood or how I understand spirituality. Like that doesn't, sitting in a yoga class, letting, you know, thinking, oh, I'm going to let my body heal from its cold or its virus and I'm not going to go to the doctor or whatever, or I have this backache, I'm not going to, whatever it is, that doesn't affect me.
Right.
Like that just affects you.
Right. But your belief on that doesn't really creep over onto my yoga mat and, you know, get under my skin.
Right. Yeah. But as soon as you say something like some people are more valuable than other people, which happened during the pandemic to a big time politician in England.
Yeah.
I don't know if people remember that, but he ended up, you know, getting his head torn off. All of a sudden you're like, wait, now, you know, you can't do that. You can't. Yeah. But beforehand, as long as that doesn't involve death, sure, you can say people are more valuable than other people. It's like it doesn't involve like living and dying and, you know, our communal life together. All of a sudden when it starts meaning we have to work together, then truth all of a sudden does matter.
Well, in identity questions, we've seen that in the past, you know, within the past decade where, you know, when someone says, I identify as black, but they're not.
Right.
That people went, no, you can't do that.
Right.
Because you can't identify with an experience you didn't actually have. And so all of a sudden, but when that was around, that conversation, maybe in similar circles around sexuality, was going in a different way where people said, I guess you can have your own truth there. It doesn't seem to be really impacting me. But all of a sudden, when it came to race, it was like, no, that's not okay. What, you know, you bumped right. into something that was right. like, that's going to hurt a cause that right. matters. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So all those things are, part of our new year.
Part of our new year. Yeah.
Because we are in, and I wouldn't say we are, COVID is over, but we are in what I would call a post-COVID world.
Yeah.
In the United States. And I think that we are, they're all of this, there's all this garbage. Like, yes. Because it was a community that was isolated. Like, so you think about it, it's the kid, the teenager who stayed in his bedroom for year and a half and now has to come out and relate to people.
Reemerging. Especially this school year. It's like, no matter what your school now, they're all doing the same thing now.
Right.
No matter what coffee shop you like to go to.
Right.
You don't have to wear a mask anywhere, right. it seems, around here.
Right.
Around here.
Yeah.
And that is new. Even last year,
right.
it was more varied.
Yeah. It is very new. So, our ability to relate to each other, sort of the anxiety levels are all like 10 notches higher.
Mm.
I was listening to someone quote statistics about like more car accidents, more crime, more, it's just all, we don't know how to operate anymore. 1 year of us being isolated and it'll probably take 5-10 years for us to recover.
Yeah. I was getting my hair cut yesterday and the lady cutting my hair said, this year with the pandemic over, and I've heard things like that a number of times, and it's almost, there's a funny thing that happens on January 1st, and we all know the world doesn't change.
Right.
But people tend to make transitions at that time. They'll consider chapters closed and new ones opened. We were just talking about how people start coming back to church in our churches right. in January.
Right.
And I wonder how, even just psychologically, how many people turned the page on the pandemic January 1st?
Yeah.
And what that means. December
31st, we were like, we're in the pandemic.
Yeah.
January 1st, we're not.
But what that means for the way people are thinking about things. And she was talking about how I went in to get the haircut and I'm going, wow, it's busy. And she equated that with being post-pandemic in 2023.
Wow.
Isn't that wild? Like, it was like, well, now that we're done with the pandemic, people are getting their haircut.
Right. Well, you even just drive around the city and you think, well, that place didn't survive the pandemic.
Right. You're seeing it everywhere.
That one didn't. Oh, well, that's popped up because now there's a spot for something like that.
Right.
Yeah. So you see that, which I mean, in Tucson, and we're talking from Tucson, it felt like pre-pandemic, things are pretty just slowly moving along. Economy is slowly building.
Yeah.
Then it just is a whole different dynamic.
Drive-throughs were frowned upon in 2019. Now there's more of them than ever.
Well, here's I don't know if this is a pandemic thing or an Amazon thing, but when I was a kid, or even maybe just 10 years ago, remember going to the mall on Christmas Eve?
Yeah,
and it was packed,
crazy,
arm to arm. I was in the mall on Christmas Eve with my family and my daughter's boyfriend to go see a movie, and there was, all buildings were closed. The only thing that was open was the movie theater on Christmas Eve. I was like, wait, this is weird, and this is a whole new thing. This was not the way it was.
And Amazon drivers are probably just going.
Yeah.
So there's certain things that many of us said. We were a little, the convenience of Amazon was nice, but we were sort of critics of it.
Right.
The convenience of fast food is nice, but generally around, much of, I don't know, dare I say, educated America, there was this sense that like, that's really not a good way to live. It's too rushed.
We still live that way though.
Well, more than ever.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that's like food delivery and not really leaving became moral. It became the moral thing to do. To go to Dutch Bros in the drive-thru became the moral thing to do. To get, plastic utensils became the moral thing to do, whereas that was the wrong thing to do.
Right.
And I think there's still a lot of, yeah, like confusion around that. And like, what is, we're still there. Can we ever go back? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. It used to be if you went into a restaurant and they gave you a plastic set of utensils, it was wasteful and unprofessional.
Right.
Now, if it's a plastic set of utensils and a wrapped thing, it's yeah. moral.
And being safe, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That, how it shapes, yes.
Yeah.
How crisis shapes us.
Well, and we had a conversation with our pastor's group where I was trying to say, we're in the midst of, you know, they look back at, you know, the you look back at a certain riot of the 60s or something, or at 9/11 and say, nothing was ever the same again.
Yeah.
And things went back to a certain form of normal, but certain things changed for the rest of our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And the pandemic was the pandemic and the cultural events that happened during that time. We're one of those periods.
Yes.
And we're just on the tail of it, and we do not realize how much it has shaped us and is shaping us. Yeah. Basically. Yeah. And one of those things might be, oddly, the conversation around...
what is true?
What is true is actually maybe more robust than it was before.
Yeah.
So it's not all negative.
No.
Yeah.
It's really good to see you, Andy.
Good to see you, too.
You know, so I know you don't like these things, the statistics and stuff. But
oh, sure.
But at the end of every year, we get a report on all the podcasts that I have. And Faith Over Breakfast is in a rare space that it is in the top 50% of Buzzsprout's podcasts.
Wow.
Which is kind of a crazy thing.
That is crazy.
And that is, here's the odd stat, and I thought that I was looking at just how it breaks down. And to be in the top 50%, you just have to receive 30 downloads within 7 days.
Okay. So we do that.
Yeah.
That we
it's
do.
It's that 7-day period. But the thing is, there isn't a lot above us. Right? You know, all the numbers of many podcasts on Buzzsprout are below us.
Sure.
Right, 50% of them, sure. They have a lot of podcasts. So, I just want to say thank you to the listeners and people who really are interested in Faith Over Breakfast and kind of just take our conversation and enjoy it. We really appreciate
absolutely
listening to us.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm glad I didn't kill the podcast last year when I almost did.
No, I mean you didn't let me. We only did 30 episodes, but
it was all right.
Maybe that's pretty good.
That's not bad at all.
That's not bad at all.
Not bad. Well, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, look at that. Top 50%. We're above mediocre. No, that's great.
It is, because there's not a lot of people above that.
So. No, I honestly, for being as just kind of small time and chatty and mildly cynical from time to time as we can be, that I'm quite happy with that result. That's good.
That's really good.
Thanks for caring about the stat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's encouraging to me that people listen.
Absolutely.
And we really enjoy the... I enjoy the interaction, because one of the things we did, I don't know if it happened this year, was it last year that this happened, where we had more interaction with people from listeners, and we were sending out the books and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun, to talk to people in Canada and talk to people in North Carolina. And
hey, I'm publishing another book in the next 2-3 weeks. Yeah. We should do it again.
Yes.
And then you should... like give away painted game figurines or whatever creative thing you're working on. You're always doing something cool.
There you go. Well, one of the things I'm thinking about doing, if I have time in this theoretical sabbatical I'm supposed to be on, is to start broadcasting us onto YouTube and putting up our YouTube channel.
Okay.
So you could watch us live, hopefully.
Okay. All right.
If I get that together.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's... that could be cool.
Yeah, so that might be fun. That would be a little cool thing. Well, thank you, Andy. This is short partly because the weather's crazy in Tucson right now, and water lines are bursting, and apparently you got stuck in like 3 blocks of traffic.
Yeah, if only the water line had been because of the rain. It wasn't. But no. It's been a long time. I always forget it's still going on until I get right next to it. But yeah, sorry. But
yep.
Short and sweet. Happy New Year. And we'll see you next week.
All right, cool.
You've been listening to Faith Over Breakfast with Pastor Eric Siepen and Pastor Andy Littleton. Please share us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you.